The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Ali Moreno here in the studio. And sometimes you have shows that promise you quantity over quality.
Ah.
No, quality over quantity? No, today it's definitely quantity over quality. Frank LaBeouf, Julian Laurent, Shaq, AS Love and Stevie. I don't know why everyone's on.
What?
But they're all here as we will start in the Premier League. West Ham with a 2-1 victory over Burnley today keeps their hopes of qualifying for the Champions League alive. They are just 3 points adrift of Chelsea with four matches to go. Let's go, shall we, to the former Hammer of the Year, Shaka Hislop, and ask him whether or not he thinks West Ham can book a place in the top four.
The short answer is yes. I think West Ham have every chance too when you look at the remaining games they have on their schedule. The trickiest of those ties is Everton. That being said, you've seen West Ham over recent weeks drop points away to Newcastle, so you take nothing for granted. Given the fact that Leicester have a tough run-in, Leicester and Chelsea still have to play each other, I am quietly hopeful that right. West Ham sneaks into the top four.
So, Stevie, West Ham have a good run-in, but they did drop points against Newcastle. Shaka, for some reason, brought up. What do you think regarding West Ham's chances?
Listen, they've still got a good chance. As Shaq has rightly says, they've got a decent run. And the problem for me is that West Ham look very nervous trying to see games out. And the fact is that the team that they're fighting really against to get fourth, in my opinion, is Chelsea, who were the complete opposite. You talk about professionalism and calmness under pressure. So that would be my worry about West Ham. Not the fixture list, but will they have the composure and the nerve when it really comes tight towards the last two, or certainly the last game of the season?
Stevie, I've just seen this. The bookies are giving Liverpool more of a chance to qualify in the top four than West Ham.
Why?
I knew you'd say that.
West Ham are doing something Liverpool can't do, and that is get it done, regardless of how they play. They're getting it done. They're getting results. Yes, they're holding on again today by the skin of their teeth at the end, but they get the victory. So that's something Liverpool haven't been able to do for about 4 or 5 months. So I don't understand the bookies coming up with odds like this.
Frank, you confident Chelsea, your old boys, will make it into the top four?
I'm confident, but I'm not 100% sure it's going to happen. You know, they have a better goal difference comparing to the Hammers, but they have to play City. Shaka said they have to play against Leicester, I think. So it's not going to be easy. And of course, if they qualify for the final of the Champions League, they will have the FA Cup final and the Champions League final. So it's not going to be for sure. And the Hammers seems to be fortunate in that game, well, because Burnley could have come back and draw for that game, but they keep on working hard, and it's a team who plays hard, and they have some talent, so it's not done for Chelsea, for sure, and they will have to fight until the end if they want to keep the Hammers behind them.
Meanwhile, of course, the big game this week, Manchester City taking on PSG on Tuesday. City big favourites to advance, given they've got a 2-1 lead. Going into that match in Manchester, Julian Laurent, how is Kylian Mbappe?
Not great, Dan. This is the thing. This is the big concern for PSG and for Kylian Mbappe tonight. They were very optimistic through the weekend. Both Mbappe and the club, Mauricio Pochettino as well. We talked about it on the show on Sunday. And yet today we saw him not struggling to walk, but really you could tell there was something wrong about his calf, his right calf. as he was boarding the plane to come to Manchester from Paris this morning. And then he didn't train with the rest of the team tonight at the Etihad. I was there. He came out late from the dressing room on purpose. He went on his own with two of the fitness coaches and did some little bits of running, didn't take any risk or anything like this, but didn't join at all the rest of the squad. And that's a big worry. They will make a decision tomorrow, probably early afternoon, and see how he feels, see what happens after the night. But it's a big concern for Pochettino.
Huge concern. And I can tell you from the player's perspective, a guy who depends on his speed, his athleticism, fast twitch muscles, if he's got a calf that has a strain in it, tightness, or whatever it is that you want to call it, however you want to describe it, it's not good. And by not good, I mean he's not ready to play. I don't care how they dress this up. If indeed this is a strain, and if indeed there is an injury there, miracles don't happen. A player, once that happens, you cannot rely on your leg to do the things that you're used to doing. And that change of speed, that change of pace, which Mbappe depends on how explosive that leg is. And can you push off? And the moment that you push off in a calf that is not healthy, then it's gone. See you later. Take care. It's over. I don't think that Kylian Mbappe, even if he plays, can be anywhere near as effective as PSG need him to be.
How do you play this if you're Pochettino, Steve?
My goodness. I just don't see how he can play. I'm 100% with Alejandro. You know, as Ali said, one of his major assets is physically his first step. I mean, his first step is incredible. He's got quick feet anyway, but his first step is absolutely amazing. You cannot get anywhere close to that if you have a calf injury. So, right now, if I'm Pochettino, I'm figuring out how we win this without Mbappe. Because if you get Mbappe, say tomorrow morning on the field and go through set plays or whatever your normal training day is, and he pulls out, I think the rest of the team suffers even more. So I think you go ahead and you plan how you're going to win this game without him. And if at the last minute you change your mind, or that miracle does happen, then you maybe take a chance in playing. But right now, no, you prepare without them.
Frank, if you're the Manchester City centre-backs, if you're Ruben Dias, John Stones, how aware are you of what's going on, and how much do you use that to your advantage if you say, do risk him for this match?
Well, it's for them, I think, a good point if Mbappe doesn't play, because we all know the threat that he can be. And if you're Ruben Dias and Stones, you say, OK, we can have Icardi, we can have Keane, but there is no comparison whatsoever with Kylian Mbappe. If Mbappe plays, and if I would be one of the centre-half, I know what I would have said to centre-back, sorry, what I would have said to Kylian Mbappe the first minute. You know, don't stay in my area if you want to keep on carry on playing. But it was the old time. Now they don't do that anymore. And they will have to cope normally in a good behaviour. But it's definitely a plus for the two centre-backs if Mbappe doesn't play. But they have to be concerned. You know, Neymar promised to everybody in France that it would be a wire tomorrow, yep, for Paris Saint-Germain. So I'm really looking forward to seeing it. And Julian can say it all.
Well, Jules, how do they win it without Mbappe?
It's a good question, because of all the greatest wins that they've had this season away from home, and they've had a few at United, Old Trafford against United in the group stages, in Barcelona, in Munich, every time pretty much, apart from the United game, really, the rest, Mbappe was on fire, and they relied a lot on his pace and on playing behind the high line usually, or the back line of those two teams, or three teams. If he's not there tomorrow, you've got two different profiles. Mauro Icardi, who can't really run in behind, and Moise Kean, who can run in behind and has got that power and that pace, but he's still very raw for this kind of level against those kinds of defenders. So it would be down to Pochettino what kind of game plan that he starts. But certainly without him, it's Mbappe is going to be much, much harder. They can do it, of course. They have to play with the same intensity that they showed in that first half at the Parc des Princes last week, the same team spirit and unity, solidarity that we saw in all those big away games, especially maybe in Munich, above all the others, because they struggled at times, but they never broke. They were always all together. They need Keylor Navas to be at his best again, not like last week in the first leg. And then they can do it. I mean, I thought Neymar summed it well. He said, we've got 1% chance to qualify, but 99% faith. And I guess that's the right. As long as you've got faith, you know you can score there. You might concede as well and concede chances, but they have to believe. They have to believe they can do it even without Mbappe.
Let's get some picks. Starting off with Shaka.
I think Manchester City get the job done. Just PSG have a chance, a puncher's chance, of course, but you felt that trailing, they needed a lot to go right. And it's been anything but good news for them in the week since that first leg. I think City go on and finish this job off.
Stephen?
Manchester City. I can't believe Jules' assessment of the game in Bayern where they all stuck together. 29 shots. You talk about not being able to hit a barn door for 2 yards. That's the only reason PSG are still in it. I like it, Jules. I love you. I love your positivity. Not happening.
Before we get Jules' pick, Frank?
With Mbappe, 100% I go for Paris Saint-Germain. Without Mbappe, of course, Manchester City. And Steve, it wasn't 29. It was 31 shot in goals.
Wow. Oh, beg your pardon. Excuse me.
I'm purposely going to go to Jules last. Ali?
The only reason that this series was ever going to be close was because of the individual talent of Neymar and Mbappe and the threat that they pose for Manchester City. Well, you take half of that out of the way, there's no chance. Manchester City advance and will do so easily tomorrow.
Finally, Julien Laurent.
Wow. By the way, you can play with unity and solidarity and still be nominated by the other team. The heart says PSG, of course PSG are going to do it. And the head says Manchester City.
Everyone has picked Manchester City, so be sure to join us tomorrow with an extraordinary comeback from PSG to take a place in their second successive Champions League final.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Just a few days ago, me and Ali were sat at this very desk.
Yep.
Putting together a presentation as to why Sevilla could win La Liga.
Right.
They won't. They lost 1-0 at the Sanchez-Pizjuan today against Atleti Bilbao, meaning their task is impossible. 6 points adrift of Atleti at the top of the table. Too much for them to do as we welcome in. Sid Lowe has joined us on the show to reflect on what's happening in La Liga. It is now officially a three-horse race then, Sid.
Yeah, and the analysis is very easy, Dan. I hadn't realised how easy it was. The analysis is that you and Ali did a package saying that Sevilla could win the league. So thanks for that. Yeah. Thanks for really ruining the league title race for us.
I apologise for that. I know single-handedly. Who should we go for next, you reckon? Who do we want to win it all? Overall, then, Sid.
Could you go for Sporting Gijón, please?
Yeah, certainly. I don't think I can say that professionally enough. As you can. So, Sid, three-horse race. Who's got the advantage?
Well, I think one way of looking at this is to look at what each team needs to win the league. Atletico Madrid win all their games, they win the league. Barcelona, if they win all of their games, would still need Real Madrid to drop points somewhere to win the league. Real Madrid, to win the league, need Atletico Madrid to drop points somewhere. Now, all of this, of course, is on the assumption that these teams win their own games. In other words, what they need if they win their own games. And the only team with it entirely in their hands is Atletico Madrid. But, of course, Atletico Madrid play Barcelona at the weekend. And there's a curious kind of idea going around which suggests that the winner of the league comes out of the Atletico Madrid-Barcelona game. And a lot of people have suggested that Barcelona will win that game and therefore will win the league because they'll win that game, go on and win the rest of their games and win the league. But in that scenario, they would still need Real Madrid to drop points somewhere for them to win the league title. You look at the run-ins, and it is very difficult to call indeed, because you don't look at these runs of games, the final four for, I was going to say all four teams, but if we're ruling Sevilla out, all three teams. And you don't look at that and think, these are really easy games. You look at almost all of them and think, there isn't a game in there where you say they're absolutely guaranteed to win it. Of course, they're teams that have not always performed particularly brilliantly throughout the season. In terms of the dynamics that they're in at the moment, Real Madrid haven't been beaten in 19. I think Barcelona have only been beaten once in 20, and twice in 20, which was, of course, Granada last week in midweek and Real Madrid in the Clásico. And Atletico Madrid are on a fairly significant wobble. So, I suppose, take of that what you will. I feel like Real Madrid are probably in the strongest position, but I must confess, I don't know if that's just the experience of having watched this kind of scenario so many times before, both in La Liga and in the Champions League, that when you let Real Madrid off, they come back and they make you pay for it. Real Madrid are the T-1000 hanging off your back bumper. You know, if you don't absolutely kill them, they're coming back for you.
Sid, who needs to win it the most?
I've not really thought about that question. I don't know is the answer to that. And I guess you can make an argument for all of them. You can definitely make an argument for Atletico Madrid because they've been top of the table now for 5 months. And when it looked like they were going to give that up, it looked like they would give it up, for example, last week after being beaten in Bilbao by Athletic Club. Then, of course, Barcelona failed to take advantage and beat Granada. So you could say that they most need to, because they are the team that if they don't win the league, it will be seen as a failure in terms of this season. It will be seen as them having blown it. So perhaps they're the ones under the most pressure. Barcelona, in theory, we've talked a lot this season about this being a transitional season. And I think for the first time ever, that I can remember, at least in my time in Spain, there's been a sense that they didn't necessarily need to win something for it to feel like there was progress. They've now won the cup, and now that they're in this position, of course, they really do want to win it. But I don't think they need to. And as for Real Madrid, well, I guess the answer to that question depends fairly heavily on what happens in the Champions League right. in midweek against Chelsea. I think that will impact upon the way that they play in La Liga, but in particular, it will impact upon the idea of whether or not they really need La Liga. So having gone around the houses and kind of spoken you, talked you through those three things, I think the team that probably needs it most is Atletico. And yet, of course, they're the team that at the start of any season, no one ever demands that they win the league, but they do demand it now, having been top for 5 months.
And they're up against the Barcelona side that we've traditionally seen, Ali, this season, is that they have struggled. Mm. They won the Copa del Rey, but in big matches against big teams, they haven't got anywhere near them.
Yeah, and Barcelona fans will tell you, well, we're a different version now.
Right.
We're an improved version. We're together now. We have an idea as to how we want to play.
Was what, a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, that's the point I was going to get
to. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes. Eventually, I was going to tell you that it wasn't too long ago when you lost El Clásico in a match that really felt like this was the validation for all the sort of positive momentum that you had going on. Now, Barcelona fans also will hang on to the Copa del Rey and say, hey,
yep.
This shows that we're taking a step forward. This shows that what Ronald Koeman is doing makes sense. This shows that this team, not only does they have a future, but in the present, they can compete. And I will say to all of them, yeah, that's great. Yeah, there's been some steps forward. Yes, there's been some improvements from the beginning of the season, but the bar was very low at the beginning of the season, where every game was a difficult one, where every game was a struggle. And yes, this team is better now than what they were then. But then you had the real matchup, and it's not a big name team. It's Granada at home, when you can take control of La Liga, something that you didn't have in your biggest dreams and wildest dreams at the beginning of the season. You would never have thought after that start of the year that you had, we're going to have a chance to win this. And yet you did it. You had it. It was in your hands against Granada at home, winning the game 1-0 second half, and you came up short. So it's hard to trust this team. If you objectively evaluate this team, it's hard to trust this team. Even the game against Valencia, how close they are to collapsing in a match and how close they are to losing a match and how close they are to winning a match. And this is something that I think sums up all of these teams. They're good enough to run the table, all three of them.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also bad enough to collapse.
Yep.
And that's what makes this race so intriguing. That you can make an argument for all three of them to say, oh, yeah, I can see it. And you can frame it and you can angle it and you can make these arguments and feel comfortable with those arguments. And then you can go on the opposite side. You can make arguments against all three of them. And you can feel comfortable, as we have this season, because Atletico Madrid keeps collapsing. Real Madrid's barely keeping it together. And Barcelona is a team that you simply cannot trust.
No, and it's interesting that trust issue, Sid, because Alex brought it up. And anyone who's watched Barcelona a lot over the last few months sees microcosms of brilliance. 20 to 25 minute spells where they are just exceptional. But it's very rare for Barcelona to go into a big game or a small game and take it to the opposition from start to finish.
Yeah, and there's always a moment where they feel vulnerable, isn't there? And that's the thing. And Piqué made this point at the weekend. He said that it feels like every time a team takes a shot, they score against us. And funnily enough, the stats actually almost bear that out. Now, I must confess, I'm probably going to have remembered this slightly wrong, but I believe they have let in 9 of the last 14 shots they faced. So that tells you that they're being caught in daft positions and that they're conceding a lot of goals from not very much. But it shows that the chances they're up are very clear ones, whether it's a mistake or caught on the break or just suddenly very, very open. And I think that's the thing, that they don't, to use Zali's word, they're not reliable. And you look at the front page of the two Catalan dailies, for example, after the Granada game, and they both went for the same headline, which I think sums all of this up. They both went for unforgivable, because Barcelona had worked their way into a position where they could have had the league title in their own hands. They were 1-0 up against Granada. And at that point, something goes wrong. At that point, they lose control of the game. Now, obviously, the Valencia game this weekend was the opposite. They didn't start well and they eventually found a way back in thanks to a really very bad handball indeed from Toni Lato. But they are a team that's not reliable. And yet, as Ali says, these arguments that you can make to say every team wins the league, you can also make arguments to say every team loses the league. Because if Barcelona aren't reliable in the games that really, really matter, Real Madrid, funnily enough, do seem to be reliable in the games that really matter. But look at Real Madrid. They've had 2 0-0 draws in their last four games. That's why they slipped away again. And then as for Atletico Madrid, well, we've seen what's happened over the last couple of months with them, which up to a point is a regression to normality with them, I think. But, of course, having had that advantage they had, and when they beat Cadiz in, I think it was back in January, they were 10 points clear of Madrid and Barcelona with a game in hand. That's to give you an idea of the scale of their collapse, which actually hasn't been a collapse in that they haven't been destroyed by anyone. They've just been letting draws go all over the place in the last 3 or 4 months.
Meanwhile, for Real Madrid, before that big game against Sevilla, it is, of course, the second leg of the Champions League semi-final at Stamford Bridge as they take on Chelsea 1-1. The scoreline, of course, going into that tie, Sid. I suppose, from a Real Madrid perspective, you'll go, look, there's no way we can be as bad as we were in the first leg, as Frank Leboeuf joins us as well. Pay attention, Frank. Than we will in this second leg in London.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. Of course, what Real Madrid know is that they have to score. I think you're right that they will feel that they can't be as bad in the first leg. But I think the overriding kind of emotional response for the first leg isn't so much, we can't be this bad again. I think it's even more basic than that. It was, wow, they didn't kill us off. And we go back to what I was saying at the very start, Dan, that idea that if you do not kill Real Madrid off, if you do not bury them, And you know, put 1,000 nails in their coffin and bury it as deep as you possibly can. They're coming back. They're coming back for you. And now this is no guarantee, but I think Chelsea know that. And actually, if you listen to César Azpilicueta, who spoke after the game to Spanish television, he made this point. And I just wonder if emotionally Chelsea at some level realise that they've missed a golden opportunity, which isn't to say they won't get another one. But I think emotionally Madrid are now in a position that it's almost like, well, we've got an extra throw of the dice that we weren't expecting to get, so let's go and do it.
Frank, take us through those emotions as a player from both sides.
Everybody goes through those emotions, and they all know where they're at. And in fact, you know, if you are a Real Madrid player, as Sid said, they didn't kill us, so we have a chance to go through because we're still alive, and they're going to go for it because they have the experience, because they believe in themselves. And as Sid said, if you don't bury Real Madrid coffin deep enough, they're gonna come out. And it's what happened so many times. In Chelsea perspective, they know what they did there. They know they were more superior to Real Madrid. They showed it during the game, but they did what they, you know, barely did all the season long, missing the chances that they had to score goals. But they kept on doing. They're strong defensively. They know they can kill Real Madrid very quickly if they have a chance to, but they will have to think that they can do it. They will have to be sure they can do it. Otherwise, if they just wander a bit, they're gonna be smashed back.
Sid, let's talk about the team news regarding Real Madrid. Would Eden Hazard start? Where are we on Mendy and Sergio Ramos as well?
Well, Sergio Ramos will travel. He'll be in the squad. My initial thought was that Ramos almost certainly wouldn't start, but the fact that there's been an injury picked up by Rafael Varane now makes me think, I think there's a reasonable chance that Ramos will start. How fit he is, I think, is a big question. Whether he's genuinely ready, I have my doubts, I must admit. But I think he may well have to, because, of course, they're missing a right back. They're now missing a centre-back with Varane out. They don't even have Fede Valverde. At least we don't think so, but we're waiting for the results of his PCR. Hazard, I think, will start, and I think he will probably start up front in a two with Karim Benzema.
Could be his day of redemption, Sid.
Well, it could well be. And, of course, this is what everybody's been waiting for. I must admit, and I could try and be careful how I say this because there is a risk of it sounding cruel. I think one of the things that Real Madrid did well 2 or 3 months ago was stop waiting for Hazard. And the reason I say that is not because waiting for Hazard's a bad idea, because, of course, he's a fantastic player. We've seen what he did in England. But I think one of the things that tended to happen over the last year and a half was that there was a desire to get him back. So he was rushed back quickly. He was put in the team as soon as he was ready. There was this kind of sense that everyone else who played was just there to hold the place until Hazard turned up. And as soon as he was ready, he would go back into the team. This time round, I think, was slightly different emotionally in terms of how they handled it. Right, we don't wait for him. When he's back, and then we look at it. But until then, everyone gets on with it. And we started to see better performance from Marco Asensio, who'd been really, really poor for a lot of the season. We started to see better performances, albeit still erratic, from Vinicius. You started to see occasional appearances, although not very many, from Rodrigo. And so you start to get other players taking responsibility. I think what makes this different this time is they've taken longer about it. They've been absolutely certain before they put him back in. And there were signs at the weekend that there's something there from Hazard. Now, we all know the talent that he's got. But the truth is that at Real Madrid, we just haven't seen it. And this is why I think one of the ways of looking at this is to say that Eden Hazard hasn't been bad at Real Madrid. He just hasn't been there. And he really hasn't. He's been almost entirely irrelevant in his time at Real Madrid. And as you say, this now is the perfect opportunity to say, oh, by the way, this guy who cost 100 million euros or 160 million euros, according to the Belgian press, this guy who was going to be a superstar, actually, he's still quite good.
Who's going to the final, Ali?
Well, as I said last week, Real Madrid.
Because is there Real Madrid? Because you didn't bury them?
Well, Chelsea had so many opportunities to just completely destroy Real Madrid. And, you know, Sid and Frank are alluding to the fact that you have to bury him, you have to kill him 1,000 times over. To me, when I think Real Madrid, I think, and this is way out there, Michael Jackson, Thriller video. Monsters popping all over the place. That's what Real Madrid are in Champions League, right? And they keep chasing you. And they're there, and eventually they're going to get you. That's why you have to kill them. And you didn't. You didn't. You let this team that was dead, it was dead. All you have to do was put away your chances. You let them live. Now you have to deal with the consequences.
Who's going through, Frank?
I want to believe Chelsea has a better chance to go through, especially if Ramos starts and he's not ready, Varane is out. Defensively, it's maybe where they've been the most consistent. and they are missing the two main centre backs. Therefore, I want to believe that the offensive side of Chelsea will finally find the net, and I wish them that. But I'm not 100% sure. But I think after seeing the first leg and what I see from both team, I really think Chelsea has a better chance to go through.
You seem a bit sad, Frank.
No, I'm concerned. So I'm a member. I'm very humble about that because...
Oh, yeah, okay. That's it.
Yeah, that's a new word.
I'm not sure that I'm going to be
right. Definitely just learned that
what?
Word.
What?
Says the man wearing a Hollywood FC tracksuit. I'm very humble. What? Apparently, Sid, I have to tell you that Thomas Tuchel has got 17 clean sheets in his last 23 games. When I asked you whether or not Real Madrid are going to break through that defence.
Well, you know what? I mean, there's a couple of things. One is that as soon as we were talking about dead and buried, as Ali points out, the thriller video, that's exactly the image that came to my mind as well. This idea of all these Real Madrid players just kind of rising out of the ground and going, hello. I also have a feeling that feeling that Chelsea had that they were better than Real Madrid in the first leg. And so you just do the same thing again. Well, if they do the same thing again and it doesn't come off, then where does it put them emotionally? Where does it put them if they're suddenly encountering Real Madrid players in different positions, Real Madrid players ready for that, and then having to find another solution? And then the other thing that occurred to me was, you bring Ramos back, and maybe it's not for him to play at the back. Maybe it's for Ramos to come on and score in the 92nd minute, as we've seen him do before. I just cannot imagine. I mean, this isn't to say, you know, we know what football's like, but yeah, Real Madrid go through.
Wow. Mm-hmm. What about that interesting stat I brought up that you completely ignored that I had to do?
That okay. Interesting stat, I've ignored it because one of the things about Real Madrid we've seen this year is they don't score enough goals, that is true.
Yeah.
But when they've absolutely needed to, they've tended to find a way through, whether it's someone you don't expect who scores. Look at the Atalanta game. They score in the 88th minute and Mondi scores a goal, which no one expects. And Zidane admits after the game that was a training ground routine. But it was a training ground routine that went wrong. The ball wasn't supposed to go to Mendy. Mendy wasn't the person supposed to be taking that shot on. It was supposed to be someone else, and they get through. Yeah, I think about games this year where, well, for example, at the weekend, where Militao scores a header and then Casemiro scores without even meaning to. They go away to Valladolid and don't play well, and Nacho gets a goal. So it's true that Real Madrid haven't scored enough goals this year. It's true that too often they've failed to score, hence those two recent 0-0 draws that mean they've got to fight for the league title rather than having it basically in their hands. But when it comes down to it, somewhere along the line, you always feel like they'll find a way.
Was Sid making an argument for Real Madrid there?
Yes.
That was a for Real Madrid argument? Okay.
Hey, and I was interested in the Mondi Mendy pronunciation. Frank, what are we going for?
It's Mendy.
Mendy. You idiot.
Good. What?
He said that with such disdain to you, Sid. Wow. The humility is dead. The French arrogance is back. Thank you very much, everyone.
I'm just pleased to be told the right pronunciation. That's good. That means I can stick with it now.
There you go.
And Frank is humble.
Perfect. Hey, Frank, very humble.
Okay.
Look at that.
Humble. I am humble. No doubt about it.
Humble and sad.
Yes, very much so.
For a lot more on the Champions League, be sure to check out our YouTube channel. It's called ESPN FC. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It was a big story not only in England but across the world. Of course, Manchester United against Liverpool postponed after protests outside of Old Trafford spilled onto the pitch, meaning that they could not guarantee the safety of the players or indeed the staff ahead of a kickoff. Mark Ogden and Julian Rom, of course, were both there reporting on this. Boys, I suppose just an update. Jules, you seem to have some new lavish curtains in your life. Has this got anything to do with what's happened in the last 24 hours?
Unfortunately not. I'm just in a hotel in Manchester, not far from where Augie lives. I didn't get the invite to stay with Augie and his family, so I had to stay in this hotel, not far from the station and the Etihad with, I have to say, disgusting curtains, yeah.
They're lovely curtains. I like them. Right, come on, before people start getting angry. What has happened over the last 24 hours, Mark?
Well, it's been a bank holiday in the UK today, so a lot of people have taken the day off, including the administrative staff at the Premier League and the FA. But what has happened is that the Premier League and the FA have both said that they are investigating what happened yesterday. They're seeking the observations of the clubs. It's basically a mechanism to buy a little bit of time to investigate properly, to find out what actually happened. But the Premier League have also, separately but also in a kind of way connected to it, have issued a statement today talking about how they're going to implement a new charter for football which will protect the pyramid and hopefully prevent any kind of attempted Super League breakaway in the future. So it's not connected directly to yesterday, but it has a connection in the sense that, you know, yesterday's protests were all kind of sparked by the Super League breakaway attempts 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, we'll talk about that Charles' statement in a moment. Mark, what's the temperature with regards to the sympathy towards the fans, anger that they caused the game to be cancelled? Like, where are we in that?
Yeah, there's been a real split. And I think the people have got different opinions on this, have had entrenched opinions anyway. But the view is that, you know, protesting is fine and having an issue against the owners is fine. But there was a sense that they stepped over the mark by... It turned violent. You know, police officers were injured. There was one that had to have surgery on the last night. One had a dislocated cheekbone. So I think the violence has lost them a lot of sympathy. And I think, you know, this was a protest against the owners specifically, rather than against the Super League. It was a protest against the Glazers, who have, in the eyes of the fans, taken money out of the club on a prolonged basis for 16 years now. So it was a very specific protest. And I think, you know, a lot of non-Man United supporters lose a little bit of sympathy for them on the basis that, you know, Man United are second. Only Man City have spent more than Man United in the last 7-8 years in the Premier League. But saying that, you know, the Man United fans have got a right to protest in the sense that they feel that the money that has been put into the club is being, you know, wrongly diverted to pay interest payments, to pay dividends. You know, let's say that Man United tried to sign Erling Haaland this summer. Let's say it cost £160 million. Well, if the Glazers or Man United say they can't afford that, the fans will say, well, if you weren't paying £80 million a year in interest payments or dividends, then we could afford it. So the fans have a right to protest, but I think the way they did it yesterday and the way it turned out that it got the game called off has probably lost the sympathies of the neutrals, shall we say.
I suppose, Jules, on the flip side of that, if there were just a protest outside of Old Trafford, we wouldn't be talking about it to the extent that we are.
That's right. They wanted the game to be postponed. I mean, when once it was announced that it was postponed, the ones who were still left at the Lorry Hotel, who you know had been protesting where the players were staying, were singing, "You will play when we want or when we tell you." Clearly, the aim was to get this game postponed, and have an impact with that decision made. I said on the show this morning with Mark and Gab that I think the power of this protest would have been much bigger had the game been played and someone, let's say like Marcus Rashford, had said, "We've heard the fan, we've heard their voice, with them, we are with you in this, we're backing you up." You know, again, against what the Glazers represent right now at the club and the way, the direction that they took this club for in the last 15 years. We've said the stadium used to be one of the greatest in the country. Same with the training ground, same with the team, the greatest players in the world. And 15 years on, it's not the case anymore. They haven't touched the stadium. It's old. Same with the training ground. The team is by far not the greatest in Europe, not the greatest players anymore there. And despite the money spent, and badly spent, as Mark just said, because they also appointed the wrong people in key positions, this is where we are now. And you can understand the frustration and the anger from the fans.
Mark, how much will this coverage fuel future protests?
Well, this is the question that we have to find an answer to, because it's not just Man United who have got issues with their owners. You know, Newcastle United have got a long-term opposition to Mike Ashley, their owner. The Arsenal fans have obviously come out in recent days and weeks to protest against Stan Kroenke, their owner. So I think if this turns out to be something that gains traction for Man United fans and actually has an impact, then I think other fans will follow. So the Premier League, I guess, have got to be careful on this, because if they punish United by maybe points deductions, then fans of other clubs may feel that the only way to hurt their own owners is to have point deductions with them too. So it may encourage other fans to do similar things. I think it'll be harder to do it. I think the police now and the stewarding aspect of it will be a lot tighter, a lot tougher. But still, if there is a reward for stopping a game being played in the eyes of the fans, then it's a very dangerous road to travel, because the Premier League don't want to encourage other groups of fans to protest. So this is one reason why they've issued this charter today, to try and offer fans a dialogue route to resolving their problems. But, you know, let's be honest, that we've seen protests over the years with fans, we've seen lots of dialogue, and nothing actually happens. In the eyes of the fans often do get left behind in terms of ticket prices, kickoff times. They feel that their game has been taken away from them, and I don't see how dialogue with the Premier League or the FA or the stakeholders, as they're called, will make any difference. It feels just like a bit of a sop to the fans, just to keep them quiet. So there's a lot of talk and a lot of acting to do in this, and I'm not quite sure it takes us. I think we're all kind of waiting to see what happens next, really, in this one.
Let's take you through some of the main points from the charter. There's a lot of words there, isn't there? And I'll take you through it quickly. Additional rules and regulations to ensure the principles of the Premier League and open competition are protected. A new owners' charter that all club owners will be required to sign up to, committing them to the core principles of the Premier League. Breaches of these rules and the charter will be subject to significant sanctions. We're enlisting the support of government to bring in appropriate legislation to protect football's open pyramid, principles of sporting merit, and the integrity of the football community. Right, so basically, Jules, this all means that despite what we're hearing from Florentino Perez, a Super League is not going to happen.
Well, it won't be happening if this new rules or new regulations or legislation is coming into place, and it will. And what's interesting, of course, is who's driving this. Are the other 14 clubs, the one outside of the top six, who threaten or try to force their breakaway and they move out of the football as we know it right now. And those 14 clubs want more protection, and rightly so. They don't want any more of these Super League project incidents like we saw 2 weeks ago now. And they're right. And because, as we know, to vote for it, you need 14 of the 20 votes of the 20 Premier League clubs. Even if the top six are against it, the other 14, if everybody votes for it, then it will pass. And that will probably be the next step. And like you say, for Florentino Perez and Andrea Agnelli, probably the last nail in the coffin of the Super League.
That's it? It's dead, Mark?
I think so, yeah. I don't see how it survives in its current form. I think the big clubs will always want to have a bigger slice of the pie, and I'm sure they'll come back with some kind of redesigned attempt to do it in maybe 2 or 3 years' time. But as it stands right now, I think it's dead. And I think, let's be honest, Andrea Ranieri's got bigger problems. He's got to get Juventus in the Champions League, which it'd be quite embarrassing if they, one of the lead figures in the Super League, miss out on the Champions League by finishing fifth in Serie A. So I think he needs to deal with more immediate problems right now than the Super League.
A lot more from Mark and Jules. Well, not that much more, because Gav's involved as well, as they go into a deep dive on the Glazers and their ownership of Manchester United. It's well worth listening to the latest edition of the Gav and Jules podcast. Inter Milan, of course, are champions that dominated the sports newspapers in Italy. Crazy about Inter, the 19th Scudetto is conquered. Meanwhile, Corriere dello Sport going with Zang champions. Inter celebrates Scudetto number 19. Wild parties in Piazza Duomo, which is where me and Ali have hung out in the past.
Chasing pigeons.
The best. We honour Inter champions of Italy. When Ali says chasing pigeons, we literally were. Was it whoever attracts the most pigeons that would win the Champions League between Real Madrid and Atleti?
And we were wearing jerseys for both teams.
Yes, we were. Good, bye-bye.